Hey, sale pros, if you're looking to grow in your sales career or you simply enjoy lively sales discussions, we're here for you.
Hi, I'm Tom Bloomer. I've spent over 30 years walking the walk. I've knocked on the doors and overcome the same obstacles you're facing as a seller, sales manager, leader, and VP of sales. I currently assess, build, and train high-performing media sales teams. Let's roll up our sleeves together.
So enjoy listening to Tom and his guests talk sales. Okay, Tom, who's our boomer on the show today?
Well, Kel, before we get there, I wanted to share, if that's okay.
You're going to share something?
Yeah, and I normally don't do this, but I just finished a really good book. And I just had to share.
Okay.
It's got murder, it's got crime, courtroom drama, and the main character's a podcaster.
Really?
Yeah. It's by an author I'd never read before, Megan Golden.
Okay.
It's called The Night Swim. It's a book Kayla had recommended to me, and I got to tell you, I just finished it. Hopefully, you're going to read it because it was really good.
I heard a little bit about this on a true crime podcast I listened to. That they were talking about this book.
Now, is that where you hear about, you know, because you get books from all over the place. So where do you hear about the books? What are you reading now? Anything I'm going to want to read?
Well, I hope so. I just finished one that was called Sometimes I Lie. And I got that on Facebook. I follow Reese Witherspoon's book club. And from there, I went and I checked it out on Audible because I don't read that much since I walk the dogs all the time. I listen to a lot of books. And that one was really good. I went through that one pretty quick. It had so many twists and turns. The first couple, I was just like, oh, wow. Well, and then it just kept happening and didn't see a lot of that coming. I really enjoyed it. I just passed that book on. I bought it for Kayla. I just passed that on to her. I hope she likes it.
I hope so, too. And those are the kind I like where they you don't see it coming.
Right.
Something new happens. And you said you heard about that in a book club?
Yeah, Reese Witherspoon. She's got a Facebook club on Facebook that I started following.
And they talk about different books they recommend.
Do. Yeah, most of the time I scroll through, I look at them, I read a little bit, find a picture, snap the picture, then go find the book.
and that's a perfect thing for us to talk about because I guess when you listen to a book club like that and you like, you know, obviously you liked that book,
yeah.
You're probably going to go back if they recommend another book and maybe give it a try, right?
Yeah, I actually went and purchased two of the books instead of trying to find them on Audible yet because Audible, I get one free credit a month, so it's got to be really good for me to purchase that for the credit.
Well, hopefully if the podcast takes off, eventually you can just buy more credits.
There we go.
So share, listeners, it'll work out good. But, you know, that's such a key point. And our two guests today, to me, that's what it's all about. Andrew Frazier and Larry Prince,
okay.
They're helping small businesses every day. They emphasize sales and marketing, mm-hmm. but they're helping the CEOs, they're helping the small business owners to really grow their business. And I think that's so important. I've worked, as you know, with small business owners for years.
Right.
It's so hard to know who to trust. And I guess True. When you finally find that person, you know, you want to hear more from them.
Right. Well, let's listen.
Yeah, let's get them sharing.
Sounds good.
Hi, this is Kayla from South Jersey. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
So we are here today with Andrew Frazier. Andrew is the founder of the Small Business Pro University. And Andrew, you're out there every day helping small and mid-sized businesses grow. I've been enjoying your book. I'm almost done running your small business like a pro. And I thought what we'd do today, I like the way right in the beginning, you ask the small business owner, how did you get here, right? You need to know a little bit about how they got there. So if it's okay with you, I thought that's what I'd throw out to you today. Andrew, how did you get to where you are today?
Hey, that's a great question, Tom. Thanks for having me on board today. You know, really like everybody, it's a journey. It's an evolution. And, you know, I've evolved from starting out as a paper boy in Pittsburgh in the fourth grade, going to school at MIT and studying mechanical engineering, serving as a U.S. Naval Supply Corps officer on a ship, going back to business school, getting my MBA in finance, and general management, and then working for a Fortune 500 company in financial management, investments, and mergers and acquisitions. So really seeing the gamut, you know, having been in so many different roles, having had my own business, not just my business now for the last 12 years, focused on coaching, consulting, and training entrepreneurs and small business owners to help them maximize the value of their company and help them to learn how to grow their revenues, increase profitability, and obtain financing a lot easier. So, you know, it's a evolution, continue to learn more and more, and really use everything that I learned to help other people be more successful, which I love to do.
In your book, you talk about without sales and marketing, you have no business. So how do you explain that to a business owner and get that message across to them?
Well, you know, when I think of it as a business owner, what's your most important job? Which is S&M, not the other one, but sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really, if you don't have any sales, the rest of the business doesn't matter, because you're not really in business until you start making sales anyways. And, you know, as the business owner, you know, a lot of people start a business for reasons other than wanting to market and sell. But you have to understand that your job as a business owner is to market and sell. And the more effectively you do that, the more successful your business is going to be. So it's important to learn how to do that better. Even the best salespeople take sales training or continuing to learn, but a lot of small business owners just go out there and wing it. And how good are you going to do your most important job if you're just winging it?
Yeah. And I guess you talk about what you don't know will absolutely hurt you. And you hear about all these small businesses that open and so many of them close. Is that because they get into it and they don't realize, you know, they think they can just have fun with their passion. They have something they're really good at, but they never dream that they're going to have to market it.
I mean, definitely for a number of reasons. I mean, there's so many things you need to know as a business owner. You can't possibly know them all. So everybody comes in it from a different space. So it's important to fill in your knowledge gaps, either personally or with bringing people onto your team. And sometimes it's hard to, you know, solve a knowledge gap if you don't know you have it. So, you know, one of the things I try and do is educate people on, you know, the most important things that you need to know as a business owner, at least know about, so that they don't come up and surprise you at the end.
Mm-hmm. Is there a kind of like a checklist? If you're sitting down with me for the first time and I have a small business, I'm Andrew, I'm struggling a little bit. Are there three or four items that you ask me right off the bat to see exactly what some of my issues are?
Yes. You know, the number one thing you talked about, sales and marketing, I have to understand if you understand what your target market is. Because if you're not going to do that, you're not going to market and sell effectively. And the majority of challenges businesses have is not marketing and selling enough. So that's the first step is, are you even on the right track as far as marketing and selling? And most of them aren't, because they don't fully understand what it means to market. And we'll talk more about that as well. And, you know, second thing is, I got to figure out, do you understand your business model? Like, do you understand how you make money, how your business makes money? Because, you know, a lot of times you may be selling things, but you may not be making money. So where's the disconnect? You know, what are your costs? You know, how much are you pricing? You know, all the, you know, are you pricing right? Are your costs right? Are you doing, you know, so really, those are the two biggest things, is understanding if you're doing marketing and selling right, and if your business model works. Because if you do those two things well, the other stuff can fall into place.
I imagine that can be an eye-opener for them. So, hey, we're busy. We've got a lot of merchandise we're moving. There's a lot of people coming in. Why am I not making any money?
Right. No, happens all the time. One client I came in, they wanted to buy a building. So, you know, they were selling, you know, good amount. They had an auto repair business. But when we looked at it, they weren't charging enough. So their profitability was way down versus what it should have been. So, you know, if you don't figure that out, you're never going to be able to grow. You're never going to make enough money. So, you know, part of marketing and selling is getting customers, but you got to have the other part of making sure they're profitable customers.
And I would imagine that's where your background really comes in, right? Because you've got the MBA and finance and things like that. So you can sit down and say, here's how you market, but here's how you make money. And that's got to be important. You would assume that that's one of the reasons they're in business.
Right. I mean, definitely that's key. I do have the finance and business strategy background, but working with so many small businesses, marketing is like their biggest challenge. So I've been able to really learn a lot, help a lot of people learn and try different things. And you know, at the end of the day, marketing is key, but you also have to remember all marketing is not the same. And if you're a small business, you have to market almost the opposite way that a large business does it. And because of that, most people don't understand that. So they're just trying to do what they've seen. And it doesn't work really well for small businesses. So really helping them with their marketing strategy and understanding, you know, how they should approach marketing is key. Definitely.
So now you talk about working on your business, not in your business. So for a small business owner that's listening here, that's looking for some ideas, can you kind of give them a little bit about what you mean by that?
Okay, no, great. I think that's critical for people to, even if you're not doing it yet, that you have to understand that's got to be the goal. And what it's really about, if you look at initially when you start a business, you're working in the business. You're either like the employee delivering the products or services, or the supervisor helping to make sure the products or services are delivered.
You're the key person, right? You're the one that makes it all work.
Right. And, you know, but you're focused on like today or maybe a week. But if you only do that, your business is going to be very short-sighted and it's going to be hard to improve. So the goal is to build your organization so you can spend your time working on it instead of in it. But to do that, you have to have employees, you have to have at least one supervisor so that you can be a manager. And being a manager is a whole different role, but being a manager is about optimizing your business, building capacity, putting in processes and procedures. And what that does, it allows your business to continue to develop and grow, and it allows you to have a further, you know, have more of a plan and see things as they're coming. But if you never get to be able to be in the manager role and actually do that type of analysis, then your business is going to suffer. And a lot of people get in the catch-22. You know, you can't spend time managing if your products and services aren't getting delivered. So, you know, figuring out how to have employees and a supervisor so that you can take that next step is key.
Yeah. One of the things I really like that you talk about is finding the ability to empower the manager or the people that they bring in. And I know years ago when I was a younger leader, I didn't think anyone could do the job as well as I did. So, you know, I'd be out there and I'd be trying to juggle 15 balls in the air because I didn't think anyone could do job number one that I needed to do. How does a business owner understand, okay, they may not do it exactly the way you did it or as well as you did it, but boy, you better let them do it or you're never going to grow. How do you teach that?
And if you're used to managing, you're really good at managing stuff, and you can never bring a manager in that can do what you do because you've been there so long, you know everything. You know, a lot of times you know more about every single thing in your company than anybody else does. And you have to empower them, you have to educate them, you have to coach them. And it's really hard. You know, I'm working with someone now and your tendency is just to manage. And, you know, the coaching, you know, it's, you know, the first thing is I talk to them and say, you can't tell people what to do. You just have to ask them questions and help them figure out what they want to do. And that's really hard because you know the answer, but you have to let them.
But if you just give it to them, they're not going to learn, right?
And they're not going to own it. Mm-hmm. You know, and at the end of the day, if they don't own it, then you still have to manage. Mm-hmm. And then you're still the manager de facto. So then you can't do the job of planning and working on the future of your business. So, you know, you have to build the blocks below you and help them be competent. So the only way you can do that is allow them to make mistakes, allow them to try things, but make them own it. You know, ask them, what do you think we should do? Maybe give them some input. You think that's best? Or what if you tried this? But you got to let them come up with the solution so they own it, and then they got to deliver upon it, and then you coach them. You know, maybe this didn't work out right, but what did you learn? How would you do it differently? And that's totally different than saying, oh, this is happening. Okay, you need to do this. All right. And it's a mind thing. If you've been managing for many years, it's really hard to make that shift. So it's something that takes time. But if you don't do it, you'll never have competent managers. And the managers you'll be stuck with will be making you manage because they'll wait for you to tell them what to do. And then they'll do it, but then they won't own it. So if it doesn't work, they'll be like, well, that's what you told me to do.
You know, and it's human nature, right? If when somebody tells us something to do, we do it. When it's something we have accountability and we decide this is the way we want to do it, there's that extra, much more effort, much more accountability. They're into it. They're involved. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And it gives you what you want. It gives you your time back.
So Andrew, there's a couple things that I really was looking forward to you sharing with our listeners today. And one is something that's very important to me, and you call it the ultimate elevator pitch. So kind of get started. I'm sure I'm going to have some questions, but tell us about this ultimate elevator pitch.
Okay, great. So it's really a 60-second commercial for you and your business, because you have to be brief, clear, and concise. And one of the big challenges for entrepreneurs is you could ask them a question and they'll talk to you forever about it, but they won't give you the answer that you want. So as a business owner, this is a four-step format that allows you to communicate in 60 seconds the key things that someone needs to know to figure out if they have a need for what you have, that they like your solution, and whether they consider doing business with you.
So, all right, so we got 60 seconds. What are the four things I got to try to get across?
Okay, so the first thing is you have to create the need. So you create the need. Number two, you talk about your solution to the need. And then you give an example of your solution, and then you give a soft close to figure out if they're interested. So let's start with step one, creating the need. What does that mean? It means identifying the need, want, or desire that the person may have. You know, real quick, if you think about it, if you go into a movie theater, you smell popcorn. You didn't need popcorn before you came in, but once you smell it,
my wife needs popcorn. We're going for the popcorn.
So, you know, you create the need. And then, you know, once you identify the need, they can decide, is this a need that they want? If it's not, if it's not, then you don't have the right solution for them. But so that's the first step. The second step is, you know, they have the need. What is your solution? You know, how are you going to solve their need? So then they can identify with, you know, is this a solution that I think can work for me? From there, you got to give an example, so that they can say, put themselves in the example and see the solution working for them. And then after that, you ask them if that is something that they might be interested in or they might have a need for. So it's a real short, sweet, and you can do it real easily. And it's proven many, many years. If you look at any commercial on TV, you know, take a Tide commercial. You've got kids running around in the dirt, so their clothes get dirty.
There's a need at this point.
Yeah, so you need clean clothes. Mm-hmm. So Tide is like, you know, Tide, we're great at cleaning clothes. But not only that, we're going to give you an example. We're going to wash our clothes in Tide, and we're going to wash the clothes in somebody else's stuff. And you can see our stuff is whiter and brighter. So you're like, I want whiter and brighter. And so then they say, is it your family worth having Tide? There you go. Less than 60 seconds. They've, you know, either you want it or you know you don't, but you've made the decision, you've moved forward faster. And even if they don't have the need then, it's easy to remember that you have the solution to that need when it's correct. So that's all you got to do for your business. You don't have to tell people everything you do. You just give them, you focus on them. What do they need? What need do you solve? How do you solve it? Case closed. If they have that need, then they need you.
Yep. And I love the way to me, because a lot of different people go out and they try to, they'll teach you, hey, this is your 60-second commercial. This is your pitch. And where people, I think, miss the boat sometimes is starting with that need. Because, you know, you and I start talking, you meet somebody, maybe it's in a networking situation or on the street. They might have a need for what you have. But if you don't address that up front, they start tuning you out. I mean, people are real quick to tune out. If they don't see value, they're starting to think of, oh, you know, that buffet looks good over there. As soon as this gentleman here stops talking, I'm going over to refill my drink or doing something. You get those couple seconds of their attention. You're showing, hey, start with that need and then show them how you're going to be a solution. And you're probably going to get them to listen for the whole minute.
Yes. You know, you got to get their attention first. And that really allows them to see that you have an understanding for them and what they need. And that goes a long way.
And I think that's where the practice comes in, because, you know, if you don't know it, you're sitting there and your mind is trying to think of it, and that's going to come out canned. It's not going to come out. You want your personality to come out. If you're not living it and know it inside and out, then your personality doesn't get that opportunity. And that's what really, I think that's what we connect with people when we feel that personality and that genuineness. So you've got your pitch, but it better be with that personality.
Right. And that's where the example comes in, because you get excited when you talk about how you help people. And, you know, so your energy comes out and, you know, and that shows, and that makes a difference. They see you're passionate and you care about what you do and you care about your customers.
Yeah, no, it's so important. You're reminding me of a story. One of the senior VPs I worked with years ago, I was responsible for our corporate training. So people would come in for a week of training, and he would come in and he would do a session every time when we did the training. And his session was so basic, but it was so impactful, because what he would do is he'd ask a couple of the people to come up front and, you know, give us your pitch. Tell us what you sell. What do you do? How do you do it? And they'd go through, and then he'd bring a couple people up and he'd say, tell me about, you have two kids, you told me? Tell me about your kids. You know, tell me about, what do you do when you're not working? And you would see a difference when people would be describing their pitch and then when they described their kids or their passion or their loves. And that's what it's all about, getting it to that point, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is Ryan from Cary, North Carolina. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
Okay, so we're back with Andrew. And Andrew, there's a key takeaway that I'm really excited about you sharing with our listeners. You're going to give them the three reasons why they should market like a drug dealer. Did I say that right?
That's correct.
All right. Share with us. How? What are those three reasons?
Well, the three reasons are, one, they don't sell to everyone. Two, they don't spend or overspend on marketing, and three, they make friends. And that's really marketing 101. And the reason I use that as an example is because it's hard for business owners many times to understand what a target market is. But by giving an example, they understand it. So the first one, you know, they don't sell to everyone. You know, drug dealers, they don't try to make you buy drugs. They'll offer it to you, but I've never seen or heard of anyone being chased down the road by a drug dealer trying to make you buy drugs.
That's not going to end well for them, is it?
Right. And they don't have to, because they don't sell drugs because they sell themselves. So basically, you offer what you have. Most times people know whether they're interested or not. So if you have to convince someone to buy what you offer, it's very unlikely that they're going to buy it. And if somehow you get them to buy it, they're not going to be happy with it. So
they're not your target audience.
They're not your target audience. So you need to figure out who values what you do most and who you're solving the most important want, need, or desire for. Because then you don't have to sell. And so, you know, number one, you don't sell to everyone, and you got to figure out the right people to sell to. And you don't want to push the sale. It has to be a solution for what they need.
You're making friends. So I guess it's all about repeat business at that point, right?
Well, it's about repeat, but you know, the second one, you don't overspend on marketing, because there's a million different marketing things you can do, but you need to have a strategy that's aligned and focused on who your target market is. And as a small business, you don't have a lot of money to invest in marketing and other stuff. So, you know, you got to be real focused on it, and you can only spend so much because you have other things in your budget as well. And then making friends, you know, joining chapters, networking groups, getting in front of people. You need to be in front of new people, and it's about relationships. You know, people buy from people who they know, like, and trust. And if you have to have 7 touches, that means you have to get in front of people multiple times. And that's really what a relationship is. You continue to communicate, get to know more about each other, get to know more comfortable, and get to know how you can add value in each other's lives. So, you know, one, you don't sell to everyone. Two, you don't overspend on marketing. And three, you make friends and build relationships. And if you do those 3 things and know nothing else about sales and marketing, you'll be pretty successful.
You're off to a good start at that point.
Yes. So,
and I'm imagining, I'm picturing a lot of referral business, right? Because everybody's like, hey, I know a guy. I got you, right?
So, yeah, I mean, definitely referral business is great, but you have to get business first.
That is true. By targeting the right business.
Yes.
All right, so Andrew, I want to thank you again for being here. We've had a lot of fun. You've given some great takeaways for everybody listening. You mentioned a playbook and a 5-step approach. We've talked a little bit about the Small Business Pro University. Can you share with our listeners, how do they reach out to you, and just a little bit more about what that program is?
Oh, sure, Tom. Thanks for having me on. This has been great. What we can do is, the best way to reach me is through my personal website. It's right above me, AndrewFrazier360.com, where you can learn about everything that I'm doing, including the university. But if you want to learn about the university, go to www.sbprou.com. And right now, if you're, you know, we have an offer where we're actually making the Masterpreneur Playbook available to people for free or complimentary. So if you go there now, you can register, get the Masterpreneur Playbook for free, and really see what it's all about, and then learn about the university, learn about our Masterpreneur Club, and how you can, you know, join a group of business owners who are looking to continually move along the path to creating a successful business that can run without them.
Excellent. And to me, that was one of the The coolest things I saw when I went to that website, Andrew, is the collection of expertise that you've brought together is amazing. I mean, that's it's got to be years of connections there, but there's a lot of really strong people that are sharing in that program. And I think what I really liked is they can go in, look through the directory, and even just choose one specific course. If there's one thing they need to get started, they can even do it that way, right?
Correct. So, you know, if there's something you want to learn about sales or strategy or financial management or getting financing, you can just choose one option based on what's available. So it gives you what you need when you need it.
Hey, listeners, it's Kelly Bloomer here to tell you the show is brought to you by Bloomer Associates. If you visit our website found in your show notes, you'll find we offer sales training, talent assessment for hiring and team development, and individual coaching for sales pros and managers. We bring over 30 years in media sales and leadership experience. If you enjoy listening to OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales, ask how our team can work with your sales team for virtual meetings, roundtables, and motivational seminars. You can contact us through our website or call today, 919-267-9871. Now back to our show.
Hi, this is Brian from Boston. OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales.
Okay, everyone, we are here today with Larry Prince. Larry is the founder of Prince Leadership Group. Your business helps small and mid-sized businesses grow, strengthen, increase revenues. Am I right?
You got it. That's what we do. Yep. And we enjoy it. I have a group of associates depending on the needs of our clients. And I guess in one word, we're about helping companies grow. That's the key, growth. One of the things I do for small and middle market businesses, I have a business analytical tool that helps to identify where companies are strong and where companies need to improve. And for majority of small and middle market businesses, the number one area that holds a company back, that's a roadblock to growth and increasing the value of the business, is a lack of understanding how to run a successful sales and marketing function. It's by far top of the list in almost every industry. It doesn't even matter the industry. So some of my clients come to me knowing that, and others come to me knowing they have an issue, that they're frustrated as business owners, that sales is not moving forward and they're not sure why. And I help them first identify and pinpoint the root cause of it and how then to see a different world and create a stronger sales function.
Yeah. I was just speaking with someone recently, and they were going, a survey was done of small and medium sized businesses of what keeps them up at night. You know, what are the things that they're worried about as they're falling asleep every night? And sales and growing revenue was like 40 on the list. And I'm sitting there and I understand there's a lot of other things a business owner has to be worried about. But you know what? If you're not focusing on sales and marketing, none of those things are ever going to matter in 6 or 9 months, right? So you better be focused on that every day or have someone like you that's showing you how to be focused on it.
It's an awakening. I ran a leadership business workshop for 14 business owners in Ohio recently. And if I had to pinpoint the number one lesson learned for them, because we went around on video conference, and I said, what's the number one takeaway? The majority takeaway is learning the importance of a sales function and not just relying on good individual salespeople, but having a disciplined process approach to how you run your sales function.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you one last question before we move on to and we're going to have a fun debate today. So this is going to be good. This is like Phillies fans, Yankee fans. You know, we don't have the beer in front of us, but other than that, we're going to have a good debate today.
I have the beer in front of me. You just don't see it.
Well, yeah, I'm not quite there, Larry, but we'll see. Okay. I've got to do a couple of these tapings today, so I'll get there. All right. So, Larry, this is a debate I've had with a number of people over the years. Do you need to be a phenomenal closer and salesperson to be a great sales manager?
You don't. There is a threshold, right? You can't be an average sales professional. You have to have some experiences and skills that cross over a threshold of competency and success as well. You don't have to be great at sales, be number one, to be a great sales manager.
So what's that threshold? Are we talking the Mendoza line? Is it like you're a 200 hitter? Do you have to be 280 and get on base a lot? I mean, that's a big threshold. I've worked with a lot of sellers. So what's the threshold? What do you have to be?
That's a good question. It is not being a 220 hitter. 220 hitters is not good enough. You have to be a 285, 290 hitter. Yeah, 15, 20 homers, 80, 90 RBIs. And here's the key. It's not just in 1 year, but consistent over time. So great sales managers understand consistency. And so you have to at least show that consistency over time when you were a sales professional to transfer over to being a sales manager.
So now I'm a sales manager now, and my one of my top reps brings me in trying to close a really big account. They're relying on me when I get in front of them to be really good and help them make that sale. That's going to build their trust and respect in me as a manager. Don't I have to be a 300 hitter? I can't get there in front of their big account and not help them close that sale, right?
You know, it depends on the industry. It depends on the situation. You're right. So in different industries, you need to have maybe a 310 hitter. One of the best skills, though, and best traits as a sales manager is the ability to teach a particular skill to somebody, have them own it, right? Teach them to fish. So if you're always as a sales manager, and this is a flaw of many sales managers, that they're always doing the heavy lifting for their sales professionals. And if you got a young sales professional and they're new to what you're doing, what they're doing, you're right. They as sales managers want to help out and they want to be competent enough. So you want to be we're talking in general, that 285, 290, but there are certain aspects you need to be as a sales rep to be a good sales manager, you need to be batting over 300. The ability to teach conversation, to teach asking for the business and closing, you might need to be a 310 hitter for that.
All right. And now, all right, so it's starting to come into focus for me now because I've worked with a number of sales leaders who went into leadership because they were a phenomenal seller. And they could go in and they would fish for their rep. You know, they would go in, they would catch, and some of them, that's what they love doing, right? Look, I got them for you. But you're talking now about a truly gifted sales manager knows how to show that salesperson how to do it themselves, right? And let them make the big sale.
Yeah. And there's a philosophy some sales managers have where they will actually do very little of the heavy lifting. They're about teaching and coaching and providing feedback to make the sales professional as soon as possible good at what they do. And they'll allow a sale to go by. Because they take the long view that they're helping that sales rep in the long term be better. And they won't go ahead and close the deal. So it depends on the industry, depends on the moment. On the other end, I know sales managers who do a great job partnering with the sales rep and say, hey, as a partnership, this client's too important. Let's partition whose role does what. So we go in as a team. And so it depends on the situation with the client, the industry, and the growth of your sales rep.
Very good. So a good sales leader is not kicking the rep under the table, trying to take over?
They shouldn't.
I've got some scars on my ankle to show you some days. So, I used to work with one sales leader, and we had a great time. He would drive from Lancaster, Pennsylvania out. We'd meet in South Jersey. We'd run around, we'd go to different accounts, and he used to love doing that because I'd be talking and he would just be kicking me under the table. And that was the sign that, you know, he had some knowledge he wanted to share at that point.
Well, that's okay. That's good. That's the cue that you're a team and you figured that out in advance. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm more focused on helping sales managers build for the long term, the competency and the confidence, because that competency begets confidence. And great salespeople are built through All those steps leading to great confidence as well. And so that's our job as sales leaders.
Do you find that an experienced sales leader understands that better and is more patient? Like you said, letting sometimes a deal not happen so that that seller can learn a valuable lesson. Is that just come from experience, or do some sales leaders understand that from day one?
It depends on the culture they grew up in as well. And so then you take the next layer, which is leading leaders. And the culture that upper management in any organization has around the philosophy of teaching sales leaders to teach and coach their salespeople. And so it becomes a part of an overall organization's philosophy around how sales leaders approach that and how they're coached to do that.
Now, you're working with a lot of business owners, right? The CEOs, the founders, and things like that. How do you explain to them if their culture or the way they're leading is part of the problem? Because I've worked with a lot of small business owners, and some of them are not the most patient people in the world.
Ultimately, the only way to make change is to, my job is to get the emotion on the table. The frustration a sales owner has that something has not happened. And that emotion, when identified, and how it affects business, personal lives, relationship, the time they spent, bottom line dollars, when they put that emotion on the table, they're open to hear my suggestions. So just to come in and say, hey, you're not a good, you need to improve as an owner of a business, how you run the sales function, that alone doesn't get you there. You gotta get that emotion out. Owners of businesses, Tom, come from one of two areas. They are entrepreneurs who develop that product, that service, and they it's their baby. It's like literally like a child. And some of them have actually sold it, and they understand no one better in the company than that owner, he or she, taking the lead in selling. But they recognize, and this is where the emotion is, they hit a wall, right? They hit a ceiling, actually, where sales don't grow, because they have never taught others how to do it. And it's all about them doing it. And so they get frustrated. And it's the conversation out of that frustration, I'm able to help them see, because the dependence of your business success is too high on you as a salesperson. You need now to let go and bring in, through a good disciplined sales process, great salespeople to do it rather than just you alone. And when companies do that, that's a breakthrough opportunity, Tom, to really grow and not rely on just the owner.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen that with a number of sales leaders and sales managers I've worked with over the years is, you know, they're used to being very successful and knowing how they were successful. And now they have a team of 10 people to manage, and they assume that they're all going to be clones doing the exact same thing they did. And it can be very frustrating when they realize that's not their team. They're going to have to teach them a little bit different. Let me close this segment by asking you, if there's one key trait, so you don't have to be the perfect sales rep to be a great sales manager, is there one key trait that you've seen that a sales manager has to have that maybe a sales rep doesn't?
Helping people be their best. Now, great salespeople help their clients to be their best. That's often transactional, right? There's goals and there's purpose behind that, quarterly, yearly, and they love that opportunity to make their clients their best. But great sales managers have great passion for coaching and teaching and helping their people be their best, not just for one quarter or one year, but for the long term.
Absolutely. Okay. All right, so we're back, Larry. Great discussion on sales reps, sales leadership. You work with a lot of businesses. What are one of the key struggles? Is there a key struggle that you see them having that we can talk about?
It's a hidden struggle. They don't realize in the moment they have it sometimes. And that is, I gave the example of the business owner, that the company's too dependent on him or her for their sales. But it also holds for when you have a superstar sales rep, one or two people that are fabulous at what they do, you become over-reliant on them. It's not sustainable and scalable. What do you do if they just get up one day and leave to get another job? And then all of a sudden you see it. And I've had clients where all of a sudden that the sales just dip and dip quickly, and it's hard to rebound. And what they realize is they don't have a disciplined process that's scalable, that you could fit any good salesperson in, and they could learn it quickly, they could apply it, and they could grow from that. And so companies need to have a disciplined approach to how they run their sales function.
Yeah. Now, and you know, I can relate it to a lot of what we went through at Clipper Magazine as we tried to grow across the country. If we relied only on superstar reps, we couldn't be in all the markets we wanted to be, because they're hard to find. They're hard to keep happy sometimes. And then if they up and leave, you're in big trouble. You better have a way to get good performance out of your B and C level reps, because that's what the majority is out there. And so how would you help them? What would you start? What's the first thing that they need to address?
I try to simplify it for my clients. And I have a mantra I use that helps guide the work I do with my clients. And that mantra is, a lot of right turns. It's the right people holding the right conversations with the right targets at the right frequency to ask for the right type of business. And so we use this right model, right? People, conversations, who you call on, customers, targets, at what frequency, but also asking for the right business. And we use this model as a guide to self-evaluate as a company or as a management team in a big company in sales management. What are you strong at within that model? And what do you need to get better at?
So kind of where what are you right with at this point? But let's go right to the first one. So the right people. So explain to me, what do you mean by the right people?
It begins with the hiring process. You have to not just hire the next person that you think is going to be good. You have to envision who is the right team of people you want selling in your organization. So you'll kind of work as a leadership group to say, let's describe the ideal, not just individual, but the ideal group of individuals and how they complement each other and how they could grow in our company. So it begins with the hiring process. It begins then with the onboarding. How do you set the right expectations? How do you train them? And like we talked earlier about, Tom, and you know, what is the model by which you train, or the philosophy of how your sales leaders, managers, are building competency and success with your salespeople. So all that is around the right people, putting them in the right geography, the right territory. That is also very important. You have two people and they're not succeeding, you move them to different geographies and you see them blossom. You know, not every geography is the same. You probably have seen that.
Yeah, and you know what? Different people relate differently with different geography, different regions, sometimes even different products that they're selling. And you know, that to me is key, the way you talk about that, because so many people, when they're hiring, they'll look at a resume and they'll say, you know what? Joe or Mary, they've been successful for a long time. They're going to do great here. We bring them on board. You mentioned onboarding. Some companies, onboarding is here. Fill out your paperwork and, you know, hit the ground. Just because they sold somewhere else well doesn't mean they're the right people for the way that company's process is set up. Is that the right approach?
Yeah. I have branded this area, calling it the hire well, live well. It's kind of a brand.
Say that again. What was that?
Hire well, live well. Okay. And it's around not just hiring the right person, but also the culture by which you then build their success. You want organizations, if you're a sales rep and you're right now, you're listening to this podcast and you're determining, what company do I want to work for? You want to work for a company that is, their philosophy around you is setting you up for success. And some of the questions you want to ask when you're on the interview is, you know, what is the onboarding process? How do you train me? What is the model by which I'm coached? You know, all these questions you want to know if you're a sales rep going into a new company or a new opportunity, you want to know you're going to be set up for success. And so that's what we do, and that's what I do, is I help companies improve their sales function to set people up for success.
Yeah. And it's so critical, and so many companies just, I think, unfortunately, they fall flat in that regard. And maybe it's they don't have the background, but let's move on. So the right people is critical, and that's something they need to address. Now, what are the right conversations? What is that all about?
Some organizations call it the right messages. But messages are features and benefits. They're just messages. They're one direction. What great salespeople do is they don't just throw messages out, right? They have great conversation. And great conversation is asking the right questions and listening. And Tom, I know on LinkedIn just the other day, you had an interview and you posed a question, what was the most important trait you learned early on as a sales rep? And I typed in, it was asking the right questions and then listening, right? That is how you have great conversation. Well, it's not an interview either.
No, I love the way you say it. It's a conversation. You know, it's give and take, it's back and forth, both people engaged, both people listening. If you're just spouting features and benefits, you're not having a conversation. And the person on the other side is probably starting to think about, okay, you know, where am I going for lunch today? You know, how do I get this person out of here? You know, they're not involved in that same conversation you think you're having with them.
Yeah, exactly. And also a conversation is just not one time. I think a mistake some reps, sales professionals make is they go into an interaction and it sits in its own space and time. And what I help organizations do and sales reps do is understand that it is a journey and a string of conversations that builds by intent and design to something that has value for your client and value for you. And so how do you look at not just this interaction, but how does this interaction, your next one, fit in through a whole process or continuum of conversations?
So each conversation is building and growing from there, right? It's not like they have to get it all in that one conversation chunk.
That's right. And in fact, one day you might have an interaction and you don't even share a single feature or benefit around a product or service. They're not ready to receive it. And you might not be sure yet if it's the right feature and benefit. And it's kind of like bullets in a, you have limited opportunities and you want to use the right opportunity to share the right feature and benefit that meets a need, solves a problem at the right time.
And so many sellers, and I'm glad you brought this up, Larry, because I promise you there are so many people listening that is a key struggle they're having. You know, for years when I would do sales training, and you'll like this, I had a baseball hat I would bring with me to the training class, and I would show, I put the hat on backwards. So, and you can tell, you're seeing me on the Zoom video. I've never been the cool guy, but I would try to act out the cool guy. So I'd have the hat on backwards, and I would explain to them, that was my approach 9 out of 10 visits or conversations with the prospects I would be working on. Going in, talking to them, sharing, bringing them ideas, showing them a couple ads, getting them just engaged in the conversation. And I would wait for that buying signal where they would ask just the right question, where I could turn the cap around, and now I was in selling mode. But I wanted them to prompt that selling mode, not me constantly walking in prompting it, because eventually they don't want to talk to you if you're doing that.
You know what I like you said is buying mode. We don't really necessarily sell. Our job is through the conversation is to get them to want what we have to help them improve their lives, solve problems, and make their lives, their jobs better. I really love that. You turn the hat around. That's the moment. Right? That's the moment where the right feature and benefit is time to share that in the right context.
Yep. And they bring it up. And you know, I used to teach, because salespeople, we go through a lot of rejection. And what I tried to show people for years is that a lot of what you're getting rejected is not that they don't want to buy from you. It's not that they don't want your product or service. It just wasn't the time right then. you know, and you just have to find and be there in front of them during that right time. And I think that leads into you talked about those right conversations, and then there was a right target and the right frequency. So what's that next step that you're leading us to?
Many companies do a smart thing. They go ahead and say, okay, let's take a look at our clients, our customers, and put them into an A, a B, and a C bucket. And that our A are the ones that are going to be, and I call it ROOT, return on our time.
I got to write that down.
ROOT, return on our time.
Okay.
And so obviously we put people in the A bucket because they're going to provide the most return on our time and have a greater chance of buying more often and growing as a client in buying what we sell as a product or service. B, and then of course C, is our clients that I'll challenge. If you have a C, you shouldn't even bother with that. I'm not sure C matters. There's exceptions where they might be a part of a business that could link to another and create networking opportunities, and I get that. The challenge is what I call activity creep. Activity creep is when your sales reps have good intention and they have time. Okay, I'm going to spend 50% of my time with the A's, 35% with the B's, and maybe 10-15% with others. And then when you look back, and this is one of the most important jobs we do in sales leadership, is we evaluate data on call activity and call productivity to go ahead and see that, you know what, your intentions were to spend most of your time here, but in the end, you ended up spending too much time over here. And that doesn't bring a good return of your time. And so our jobs as sales leaders is to make sure we have data. That's why good CRM tools are important, that we could access to look at where our salespeople are spending their time, course correct it, or maybe learn that we need to, on occasion, adjust who the A's, B's, and C's are.
Absolutely. And you know, I have found over the years, I'm sure you have, sometimes those C's, the people you're trying to show them, that's not a good return on their time. If that C is just a friendly business, a business that's willing to talk and open and just a nice person, boy, they fall in the trap of spending a lot of time there that just not going to lead to the sale they're looking for.
Yeah. And everyone gets frustrated.
Yeah.
So that's one of the most important jobs we have in sales leadership, is using data to help people spend the right amount of time with the right people.
Yep. And I like the way this is all coming together, and it's so critical that they understand not one of these phases, Larry, but they really need to understand every one of these key phases. I used to joke with people when I was doing basic training, right? When they're out there and all we're doing is cold calling. So if I had a new sales rep, the first day we hit the ground running, all we did was cold call. And I would tell them up front, you're going to think sometimes I'm really good at what I do. And then you're going to think sometimes I am the worst salesperson you've ever seen, because I'm going to go in, and if in that first minute or two I realize this isn't a prospect, my goal at that point is not to be impressive. My goal is to end this conversation as politely as possible to get to the next one where we have an opportunity. So, you know, from those experiences, don't pick up on anything I do because it's going to be bad. I just want to get out of there.
Right.
And I think that's something we got to make sure people learn. Okay, so Larry, I love your mantra. I love your right steps to get everybody through. If they're paying attention and they're thinking about the right people, the right conversations, the timing, all those things that are important, there's a couple other intangibles, right? They need to have that process, but then there's that intangible that takes them from that 220 hitter to that 310 hitter. Any key intangibles that you can share with the group today?
Sure. As a sales manager, you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable, which means you have to hold tough conversations sometimes, even with your best salespeople. To be a great teacher, to be a great coach, especially coach, you have to be willing to have not only patience, but willing to sit down and have tough talks. And not everyone knows how to do that. There's methods for learning how to sit, give feedback, have two-way conversation, to really break down the what your salespeople are doing, so you could help pinpoint ways to make them better. And you have to earn that right. And that builds what I call leadership trust in the piggy bank. So the more you do that and it the salespeople see it pays off, the more they're going to want you to give feedback and coach them and put leadership coins in your trust piggy bank. It builds trust over time. So great sales managers, if you want to be a great sales manager, you love the opportunity. You're passionate about making people great, and you're going to spend the time holding those tough talks to make them great.
Perfect. That is a perfect suggestion. And the sales rep that doesn't want that feedback, that doesn't care, they're not going to develop. So, you know, right. It's critical to be helping people that way. All right, so Larry, this has been a lot of fun. Unfortunately, we can't have it like a real baseball game that goes three and a half hours with a lot of commercial breaks. So we're going to have to wrap up. But I have a feeling the small business owners that are listening in, they may want to follow up and engage with you. Where can they find you?
Well, they could go to my website, which we have a lot of content on the website, articles, podcasts, links to other resources as well. And that website is princeleadership.com. And Prince is P-R-I-N-C-E, princeleadership.com. My email is larry@princeleadership.com. And you could call me and text me. My cell number is 973-670-6304. And call and we'll have a conversation.
Absolutely. And Larry, I appreciate giving out your cell number. I am not responsible for any of those listeners calling after 10 o'clock.
All right, so Kelly, that's it. That was today's show, and today marks the end of season one.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that went fast.
It did. It did. I'm getting a few gray hairs, but other than that, it's I'll tell you, it's been a blast. Anybody that tells you podcasting is fun is telling you the truth.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I hope it's fun for the listeners, though.
True. So is this going to be like something where you can binge all of them at one time, like shows like that?
Yeah.
Since it's the end of a season.
I would recommend all the listeners to do that. So
especially, go back and listen and binge through them all.
Especially next week when we start season two.
Right.
I think that's what we should do. Encourage our new listeners to go back and binge season one. It's all available right now. So, The show we just had, I thought was really good. That's the first time that we've done a double feature like that with both Andrew and Larry. I think it's got so much good information. Hopefully right. People really enjoyed it. What did you
feature.
Think?
That reminds me of movies. I miss movies.
Yeah, someday we'll get them again.
You think? So,
well, I'm sure some people are going to them now. I know we're afraid to, but they'll be back.
I miss the popcorn.
Well, I'll make you some popcorn tonight.
Okay.
Because we have another episode you need to edit through. So,
okay.
So we'll get the popcorn.
There, huh?
But, you know, before everybody goes, I do want to let everyone know, Cal,
yeah.
that as we kick off season two, mm-hmm. we are finally offering special sales courses.
Okay.
We're really excited about. We're working with some of our contributors. You and I have been putting a lot of effort. We've got video instruction. We've got the workbook that we have. And my favorite part, which I'm really looking forward to, are the one-on-one sales videos that we have with people.
Okay.
One-on-one coaching sessions. If people want to find out, all they have to do is DM me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
We've given them earlier in the episode. They have our phone number. By now, I think our listeners know how to reach us. But,
I would think.
Yeah. But reach out. Our new courses, to me, they're priced great because we know people right now, you know, they don't have thousands of dollars to put into training. But with everything going on, a little extra help, I think, goes a long way. And we're excited that we're in a position to finally do that.
Yes, we are.
So reach out through the website. There's a link in your show notes or DM us if you'd like more information on our first sales course offerings. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye.
So that's it. That's today's show. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to subscribe and follow. We hope you make us a part of your week, and don't forget to share with your friends and coworkers.
Should we mention the website?
Sure, the website, okayboomerteachmesales.com.
And where can they engage with us?
LinkedIn at Thomas J. Bloomer.
We hope to see you there. We'll be right back.